Hello, hello, and welcome to episode 141 of the New Ice City podcast. I'm your host, Vincent Mercogliano of the USA Today Network, and I do have to start by sincerely apologizing for the delay. I had warned you guys on the previous episode that we were going to wait for the trade deadline dust to settle before we recorded our next episode. And of course, with how down to the wire everything came and how late I ended up working on Friday, I was not able to record that day. Then Saturday was a game day. The Rangers had their new lineup in that game against the St. Louis Blues. I had to run to the training center that morning to meet a few of the new players and interview them and write about them and then get myself ready and head down to the Garden. So Saturday turned into a wash as far as recording was concerned. And then on Sunday, I have to admit, I actually tried this new thing called talking to and spending time with your family. So that was nice for a change after a week of, I hate to say it, but kind of not ignoring them, but certainly not being the most present father or husband. Unfortunately, that just kind of comes with the territory when trade deadline week comes along. So I decided and promised my wife that I would not be doing any work on Sunday and had a great day with the family, especially now as I'm looking ahead to being away for basically a week. I have a flight to Carolina on Tuesday. The Rangers are in the midst of this crazy swing of 6 games in 9 days, which I honestly don't know if I can remember that many games being played in that short of a time. It feels almost like an AHL schedule. So just a lot of balls in the air, a lot of juggling right now. And so that's why, after getting through the weekend, here we are on Monday afternoon, finally recording. And I'm not going to wait. I'm just going to, as soon as this is done, we'll plug it in, we'll upload it, and this should be hopefully available for you guys on your commute home Monday, while I simultaneously will be commuting back to the Garden because the Rangers are playing the New Jersey Devils tonight. So we're not going to focus much on the game here. This is a trade deadline episode. We want to analyze and react and discuss everything that's happened in the last week or so around the NHL, of course, but specifically with the Rangers, who ended up, when it was all said and done, landing 4 new players. They got a pair of forwards in Alex Wennberg and Jack Roslovic. They got a depth defenseman in Chad Ruedel. And they got an AHL trade, which is kind of a minor thing, but they brought back Nick Petan, who will now play for the Hartford Wolfpack as they prepare for what looks like is going to be a trip to the playoffs in the AHL. So the Rangers do end up making a series of moves. We anticipated that they would make these moves. Now, there are 2 ways of looking at this. I know a lot of fans, especially the initial reaction, seemed to be that Drury should have been bolder. Drury should have gone for maybe some guys that were more established, a little more star power, a little more of a proven top 6 type of a forward, I think is what a lot of fans were hoping that they were going to land. And then there's another train of thought where you can look at it and say, you know what, Chris Drury filled his holes here with some pretty nice bargain deals. Now, we're going to talk about both points of view on this episode. Again, initially the fan base seemed disappointed, at least the vocal segment of the fan base, but I do sense in the last few days that they seem to be coming around on that second way of looking at it. The prudent way of looking at it, the responsible way, you might argue, of looking at it. And honestly, the more that I've processed this, the more that I've talked to people around the league, I find myself landing on that side of the fence a little bit more as well. I totally understand that with some of the big names that were rumored to be available, and trust me, we're going to get into those over the course of this episode, that it felt a little deflating to not come away with one of them. Although if you think about the names that were rumored to be out there and the guys that actually got traded, it didn't all necessarily line up. And then on the other hand, it's not like they did nothing. They filled each of their primary holes. They got the third line center that they were looking for in Wennberg. They got a right winger in Roslovic, not a no doubt about it top line right winger, but I think a top line right winger we're going to talk about a little bit who has some upside and has the potential to possibly fill that role. They got their depth defenseman, and they did this all without giving up any prime assets. And while I absolutely believe that the Rangers are in go-for-it mode, and they acted somewhat in go-for-it mode, this wasn't all in. This wasn't we're going to sell the farm and throw all caution to the wind, obviously. But they acted where they were able to go and fill their needs, but they did it without having to really give up anything substantial that you feel like is going to potentially come back and haunt you. And that can be a dangerous way to operate every year. You can't go trading your first-round pick every single year. I know some teams do it, and I do believe that of all the prime assets that we're probably going to discuss in this episode, the first-round pick in some ways would have been one of the easier things to part with. I do believe that that was on the table for the Rangers in the right deal. But when you talk about the prospect pool and you talk about some of the young players who have already cracked this lineup, the Rangers did not want to give up those unless it was really someone they felt amazing about. And there weren't that many guys on the market that I felt like they had that feeling with. Anyone, though, who definitively claims that he either took the right approach by going in this direction or took the wrong approach because he should have acted more boldly, that to me is kind of just searching for a hot take. I'm not going to sit here and tell you for certain this was an A-plus trade deadline or this was an F trade deadline. I don't like doing the grading thing. I'm not going to sit here and tell you he absolutely did the right thing or he absolutely did the wrong thing. The truth is that time will tell. Maybe he should have ponied up more for more established guys, especially when we talk about that right wing spot. But I also truly believe that it would have been a mistake to panic when Jake Guentzel went to the Carolina Hurricanes and then pivot to overpaying for players that they weren't entirely sold on. Those types of reactionary decisions rarely seem to work out. And so I do think that Chris Drury was calculated in the way that he handled this trade deadline. My understanding is that they were not crazy with the quantity of high-end options on the market. I think among the bigger names that were out there, there were only a few that they were really genuinely interested in. And they felt like it was kind of a thin market. They felt like there weren't a lot of guys that merited that first-round pick or merited them considering trading some of their top prospects. So rather than just doing it for the sake of doing it, rather than doing it to grab headlines or appease the fan base or whatever kind of phony motivations there might be, I think they had a plan, a multifaceted plan. When plan A didn't work out, they went to plan B, and you could maybe even argue that they ended up on plan C, but at least they didn't deviate from any of those plans. At least they didn't go into panic mode and do something out of left field without really fully thinking it through. So we can rattle off some of the names here, and I definitely want to talk about the Guentzel stuff. You know, when you look around at the bigger names, I think that did get moved, or at least that were rumored to be available. My understanding is that Lindholm was a center that they definitely were interested in, but he went very early, about a month ago now at this point, for a higher price, and they felt like they could stomach. And now we can look and see how that's working out in Vancouver and say the Rangers are probably better off not paying that kind of price for a rental center who doesn't seem to be working out with the Canucks. Then, of course, when you talk about the winger market, I know I probably got more tweets with this name than any other in those 48 hours leading up to the deadline. Pavel Buchnevich, I know fans wanted to see him come back. I know that would have been a really cool story if it happened, but my understanding, and I was pretty adamant about this all along, I remember talking about it on the podcast weeks or maybe even a couple months ago when the question was asked, and I definitely wrote about it a few times in the last week and responded to a few people on Twitter. My understanding is that was never going to happen for a few reasons. It goes without saying, or I guess, you know, maybe I should say it, that the two sides, Buchnevich and the Rangers front office, don't think extremely highly of each other. Obviously, the Rangers looked at him as somebody that was expendable. You look at what they traded him for a few years ago when they only got a second round pick and Sammy Blais back in exchange. The determination was made then when Chris Drury took over that this was not a guy who they valued enough as a core piece of this team to do whatever they needed to do to try to keep him around. They basically treated him like a cap casualty. He had one more year remaining on his contract. They could have held him. In fact, I think they certainly would have been a better team in that 21-22 season had they had him to fill that right wing spot. And we've seen what's happened now since then. There's a revolving door there, and they keep having to make different trades to try to fill that need. But obviously, at the time, they made a determination that this is not a guy who they felt like was worth the hoops that they would have to jump through to try to keep around. Even just keeping him around for that one season, you could have argued, would have made sense. But they made the decision to move on. So we know that as a fact. And we also know, at least I know from what I've heard, that Buchnevich is not happy with the way that that went down. And it's hard to blame him for that. Who would be happy about leaving the only team they had ever known, leaving a team that they had been through the rough patch, the rebuild, the low point with, and now that things were coming back up? Of course he wanted to see that through. Of course he wanted to stick around. Of course he had some relationships on the team that were upsetting for him to have to leave behind. So Buchnevich is not thrilled with the way that that went down either, from what I understand. So that is an aspect of it. But I think even the bigger point to make here is that the asking price from St. Louis was very, very high. It's been reported in multiple places that the Blues were looking for two first-round picks, if not more, in exchange for Buchnevich, and it might have been more because look what happened. Nobody was willing to meet that price point, not the Rangers, nor any of the other 30 teams that would have had that option around the league. He stayed in St. Louis. He wasn't traded. So there was myriad factors there for why that trade wasn't going to happen. I don't think the Rangers, after only getting a second-round pick and a player that didn't do much for them back in return, were then going to turn around and give up multiple prime assets to get him back, given everything that we just went over. And I also just think that the asking price was so high that everybody around the league felt like it was over the top. So Buchnevich, again, I never felt like that was going to happen. And then I think the other name that we heard a lot from fans, and this one was much more valid, is Frank Vetrano. And I do believe that they tried on Frank Vetrano. But similar to Buchnevich, similar to what the Blues did in that situation, Anaheim general manager Pat Verbeek set a high asking price that no one was willing to meet. And the result was that Vetrano, just like Buchnevich, was not moved. He stayed in Anaheim. And I've heard that he's very happy there. He's got a young family there. He was not, I think, knocking down the door asking for a trade either. I think he would have been happy to come back to the Rangers. I definitely feel like he enjoyed his time here. But I don't think that he was pounding down the door and saying, I want to go there. Please get me out of here. I think he's content to stay in Anaheim. I've heard from people who would not be surprised if he ends up even extending beyond next season to stay with them. So those guys didn't end up working out for the Rangers for various reasons. Some they had interest in, some they didn't. The one guy that I know that they made a push on was Guentzel. And I want to spend a little bit of time on that because I know that that was a huge topic of conversation in those few days leading up to the deadline. This guy made a lot of sense for the Rangers. He's just the kind of winger that they wanted. A proven goal scorer, a guy who's scored over 40 goals in a season multiple times in his career, plays his you-know-what off, brings some of that snarl and some of that get in your face and some of that just you feel like he plays his ass off every single shift kind of an attitude. And he's a proven playoff performer. This guy, if you look at his career stats, is at exactly a point per game in the playoffs, won a cup with the Penguins in his rookie season and had a major impact if you go back and look at that run that they had. So Guentzel ended up being, in a lot of teams' eyes, the prize of this trade market. And so the Rangers, I do believe, would have been very interested in bringing him in and did make a legitimate attempt to do just that. Now, it was a little off the radar for a while because with Pittsburgh hanging on as long as they could, you knew that it was really going to come down to the wire whether or not they decided to sell or not. And then even if they did decide to sell, trading within the division always seems to kind of up the cost a little bit. So it wasn't something that was really on my radar beyond just thinking, wow, this guy looks like he would be a good fit if they could get their hands on him. But I started to hear whispers on the Tuesday before the deadline that they were in on him. And so I wrote a story, went up on all the websites early Wednesday morning, it seemed to get some traction. I had a lot of people reaching out after that. I know the story was getting shared in a lot of different places. And then all of a sudden, you sensed that momentum picking up. And Wednesday, I was hearing that the Rangers are in on this. Carolina was always viewed as one of the front runners. I think Vegas was a team that everybody felt like was looking for a big move and was absolutely lurking there. But from what I was hearing on Wednesday, the Rangers were one of the three or four teams that it seemed like had a real chance of making this happen. But by the time we got to Thursday, especially Thursday afternoon, I remember specifically getting a text that it looked like Carolina probably had a deal in place with them, and it was a deal that, at least from the Penguins' perspective, was going to be difficult for a team like the Rangers to meet. Now, I want to preface this by saying I am not reporting definitively that the Rangers offered X, Y, or Z, because I do not know for sure if the Rangers actually made a firm offer with any of the names that we're about to go over. But I've heard whispers about this. I've talked to a few sources about this, and these are kind of the dots that I've connected here. I think the Rangers drew, not just with Pittsburgh, but anybody who asked about him, a hard line on Gabe Perreault, their number one prospect, saying, we are not going to trade this guy. A lot of NHL teams are regretting not drafting him, from what I understand, when you look at what he's doing right now as a freshman at BC, where he's just racking up points and has elevated himself to, I think, absolutely being considered the top prospect in the Rangers organization and now being considered one of the top prospects in the entire league. Maybe not the tippy top, but this is a legitimate guy who people believe has a chance to be a top six winger in the NHL someday. So the Rangers said no way on Perreault, and that wasn't just with Pittsburgh, that was with pretty much anybody. So I think if they weren't going to offer Perreault, Perreault absolutely would have gotten the Penguins' attention, but if they weren't willing to offer him, it sounds to me like the Rangers would have had to offer multiple other young forwards that the Penguins felt like were close, were either ready or close to being contributors in their NHL lineup. I don't think the Penguins were super interested in draft picks. Obviously, they took draft picks. Obviously, they're willing to take those back. But the top priority was young players who are either on the verge or already in the NHL and could be guys that help Crosby and Malkin and that whole crew get back to being a competitive playoff kind of team next season. So with Carolina offering Michael Bunting, who's a guy that obviously their GM, Kyle Dubas, is familiar with from their time together in Toronto, has a 63-point season on his resume. I think last season had about 50 points. He's a guy that's been a fairly productive player at the NHL level. Getting an established guy like him, as well as three prospects from the Hurricanes, it was a situation where the only way for the Rangers to beat that was to offer, I think, two out of three from the pool of Kaapo Kakko, Will Cooley, and Brennan Othman. Now, I've heard whispers that the Rangers at least entertained, at least internally discussed the idea of maybe including one of those guys. Specifically, I think they talked about Kakko and Othman. But I think under no circumstances were they going to be willing to deal two of those guys to get them over the hump in a deal like this. And I know some people will point to it and say, look at the three prospects that Carolina gave up. Carolina didn't have any of them. If you look in the various prospect rankings, most of those guys, or most of the rankings, I should say, don't have those three in Carolina's top five. I think some might have them like four or five, but none of those guys are in their top three. But you also have to remember, the Hurricanes have a deeper prospect pool than the Rangers. And I think my understanding is the way that Pittsburgh viewed it is that, and I had a scout say this to me as well, Perreault and Othman, I think, would be considered by most higher caliber prospects than what Carolina gave up to Pittsburgh. But after Perreault and Othman, the three that Carolina gave up, one scout told me would be 3, 4, 5 in the Rangers system rankings. So there seems to be a consensus that there's a drop-off as far as surefire NHL guys in the Rangers system. Now, there are some intriguing guys. Adam Sikora, for sure, I know the Rangers think highly of and believe that he will be a bottom six contributor for them one day. Brett Berard is quietly putting together a really nice season for himself with Hartford. Dylan Grand is a goalie that some people feel like will eventually play in the NHL, whether that's as a backup or a starter. Zach Jones, I think, is a piece that was probably available in the right deal for the Rangers, and I think one person told me was kind of viewed around the league as the equivalent of maybe a second or a third round pick in the eyes of most teams. So it's not like the Rangers have a bare cupboard after Perreault and Othman, but there's considered to be a gap there. And the prospects that Carolina gave up, three forwards who all probably would have ranked in the top five for the Rangers. A lot of people felt like they would have been 3, 4, 5 for the Rangers behind Perreault and Othman. For the Rangers to match that or overcome that, they were going to have to pony up those names that I mentioned. I think it was probably going to take two of them to really get Pittsburgh's attention. And by Thursday afternoon, it was becoming clear that the Rangers weren't willing to go to those lengths. I think wisely so. Gensel, again, to me, would have been an outstanding fit for what the Rangers needed. But you're talking about a guy who in all likelihood was going to be a rental for them. I've heard that he's going to be looking for $9, maybe even close to $10 million as a free agent per year this summer. And if you look at the Rangers cap situation, that would have been really difficult for them to squeeze. So this probably would have been a rental for them. And to give up two young, controllable assets, two guys that it's plausible that both Othman and Kako could be in the Rangers top nine next season. To do that with a division rival for a rental, as exciting as that rental might be, I absolutely believe that that was too high of a price to ask. And again, I think that's what it would have required to get that deal done. I think if the Rangers could have gotten it done with one of Kako or Othman, it's possible that they would have been closer to getting this thing done. It's possible they would have done that, although again, I do not have it firm that they absolutely offered those guys. I think they just considered it. But two of those guys, plus whatever else would have been had to come in that package. Remember, in total, Pittsburgh got four players from Carolina plus two draft picks. So that's a pretty substantial package, even if you're not in love with those prospects. And, you know, we're all kind of playing a guessing game when it comes to these prospects. We're going based on rankings. And for me, I'm going based on what I hear from scouts. But the Rangers would have needed to pony up some bigger names, I think, than their B-level prospects in order to get that deal done. And ultimately, they weren't willing to go down that road. So once that happened, once they came to that realization, I believe on Thursday afternoon is when at least word started getting around that it looked like this was going Carolina's way, Jury shifted to plans B and plans C. I'm pretty sure he checked back with Anaheim on Vetrano, but also determined that he wasn't willing to go to those lengths. I know Emily Kaplan, who we had on the show prior to the deadline from ESPN, she reported that the Ducks said to the Rangers, "We'll give you both Vetrano and Adam Henrique to fill your center void if you send us Kako and a first-round pick." And the Rangers said no, which to me is also the right decision in that situation. And so then they shifted to lesser-known targets who could fill specific needs without sacrificing the future. And I do think that there's something to be said for that measured approach. To me, it speaks to lessons learned. And we could look at Chris Drury's tenure. It has not been perfect. The Rangers have certainly won a lot of games since he's been here, but you could look at the core of players that have gotten this done, and the vast majority, really outside of Vincent Trocheck, were brought here by the previous regime. And you can look at some of the missteps specifically. I think there's probably none bigger than the lackluster return that they got for Buchnevich that created this never-ending right-wing hole in the first place. You could also point to the prospect pool and say the Rangers have traded away a lot of draft picks in the last few years, and maybe if they had held on to more of those draft picks, they would have had more ammunition to compete with Carolina and have more guys outside of their top couple prospects who would have been enticing to the Hurricanes. Enticing to the Penguins, that would have given them a better chance at getting Gensel. Those are all valid criticisms. And I also would say that had Drury done nothing at this deadline, I think that absolutely would have been a mistake. But he did not do nothing here. Given everything that we've discussed about the state of the roster and where the franchise is, they needed to make moves here. This is a first-place team with a core of players who are, a lot of them, in a lot of cases, the players that they rely on most heavily are all 30 years old or older. This window is not indefinite. This window will close at some point in the coming years, so you need to take your best shot with where they are right now, I believe, every single year, especially when it's clear you're going to be in the playoffs and it's clear that the Eastern Conference is looking pretty wide open, although Carolina and Florida are certainly looking more formidable after the trade deadline. I think a lot of people feel like those are the Rangers' primary competition, and you could throw Boston in there as well, although Boston didn't do nearly as much at the deadline as Carolina and Florida. Florida, to me, is just stacked. I mean, you love the way that team looks. And Carolina, if they can get decent goaltending, that team is really going to be a problem, I think, as well. But still, you feel like the playoffs could go in a variety of different ways. So the Rangers needed to do more to help set themselves up for success. And they did. This is not a doing nothing situation. But what I kept thinking back to as I processed what they did at this deadline is, you think about what they did last year, when I think because of how close they had come on that run to the Eastern Conference Final in 2022, they smelled blood in the water. They believed that they were really close to getting over that hump. And I think the excitement surrounding big names like Vladimir Tarasenko, like Patrick Kane, Drury bought into all that, and he went out and he got these big name guys. He made these big splashes. He got all of the trade deadline headlines. Everybody thought the Rangers were absolutely stacked after that. But what happened is you had a team that didn't really mesh all that well. You had a lot of redundant skill sets. You did not have the type of balance throughout the lineup that I think you need to really have success in playoff settings. You need guys that do the dirty work. You need guys that play every shift like their hair is on fire. You need guys that retrieve pucks and win one-on-one battles and defend and forecheck and backcheck and all those things that we talk about come along with winning hockey. And the Rangers did not have enough of that last season. When they did have more of that was 2022. And to me, the more that you process this trade deadline, it feels a lot more like what the Rangers did in 2022. They did not get any of the biggest, sexiest names out there. They did ultimately end up sacrificing a first-round pick for Andrew Kopp, but that was a conditional thing where once they made the Eastern Conference Final, it triggered that second rounder turning into a first, which at that point I think they were happy to oblige. But they got Kopp, who is not some big-time goal scorer, was not some guy who was only predicated on skill in his game. He did a lot of different things that helped them. They go out and they get Justin Braun, who helps their defense. They get Tyler Mott, who improved their bottom six and brought some speed and forecheck into that mix. And they go out and they get Frank Vetrano, who nobody saw coming, only cost him a fourth-round pick, and ended up filling that void on that top line pretty well. And now, look, a couple years later, he's a guy that people were talking about would have cost a first-round pick. So the Rangers made some pretty savvy moves at that 2022 deadline, and it worked out really well for them. And it's still to be determined if these moves will work out in the same way, but I think the line of thinking was very similar. They did not give up anything more than a second-round pick, which they sent to Seattle for Wenberg. And then beyond that, it was a handful of fourth-round picks. They traded four draft picks in total to bring in three new players, and only one of them was higher than a fourth-round pick. So this is all stuff that I think is much easier for you to stomach, that sets you up better for the future while also clearly improving the team now. How much improved they are? Well, that is exactly what we're going to find out in the next few months. But I do believe that there's some potential that these deals could work out. And we're going to talk about those individual players now. That kind of leads me into how I want to wrap up this episode. And I want to get specifically into, I think, the two biggest impact players that the Rangers acquired, which would be Wenberg and Roslovic. Chad Ruedel, we're definitely going to talk about him, I'm sure, in the future. He's definitely going to see some games at some point. It looks like he may or may not play on Monday. He did not play his first game with the team on Saturday. They opted to keep Zach Jones in the lineup over him. So it remains to be seen exactly what his usage will be. The Rangers are now carrying, because of the cap space that they have left over, a full 23-man roster, including eight defensemen. So when everybody's healthy, Jones and Ruedel, I think, will be 7-8 in that pecking order. Right now, Jacob Trouba, We haven't even gotten into that, but he's going to miss, Chris Drury told us, 2 to 3 weeks with a lower body injury. I'm not sure exactly what happened to him in that last game before the deadline on Monday against Florida, but obviously he's going to miss some time. So Ruedel, I think part of the motivation for going out and getting him was giving some insurance while Trouba is going to be out of the lineup. Ruedel is a right-handed defenseman, a guy who has really solid defensive metrics, and if you talk to people, is considered a pretty reliable defensive defenseman. So he gives them that different look that you feel like maybe at some point along the way, whether it's regular season or playoffs, the Rangers might want to infuse a little bit more into that bottom pair. So he's not looking like a surefire lineup thing, but we'll talk about him more in the future because I do think the Rangers defenseman depth looks pretty solid right now. But the forwards, Wennberg and Roslovic, those guys are who the Rangers are kind of counting on to be difference makers here. And so what I want to do is we're going to hear some clips from them. I'm going to play one from each of those guys. And then after each of those, I'll come back and give you my impressions on what my sense is about how those players fit, what their strengths and weaknesses are, and what I've heard about them since I've been doing a little bit digging in these few days since the deadline. So we're going to start by hearing our first clip, which comes from Alex Wennberg, a center that the Rangers got from the Seattle Kraken.
Alex, when you talk about what the Rangers want you to bring, what do you feel like, especially when you look ahead to the playoffs, how does your game translate to that kind of style of play?
I mean, they said, obviously, they got the firepower there really offensively, and for me to slot in as a third line center, I think that's perfect. I mean, I can play both sides, so if it's to play the 200-foot game, play extra PK or whatever, I'm ready for it. And I mean, I feel like it's a time to adjust for sure, but for me, I feel like the spot's just open, it's there for take, so I'm ready for it as well.
How much pride do you take in that side of the game, the two-way game, the defense? Of game, the peak at that kind of stuff?
I mean, obviously, I feel like my game right now, it's been mostly defensively. The role in Seattle was more of a guy to shut down the first line. Obviously, I feel like I have that offensive playing me as well, but I mean, obviously, it's a team sport. You got to do what's best for the team. So we look at the points later, look at the team instead.
Look at the points later and the team instead. You know that is music to Peter Laviolette's ears. And I have to tell you, Wennberg's been here for a few days, so I've been able to have a few conversations with him. I've also been able to talk to some of the guys in the locker room that know him. Really interesting little tidbit with him. He's a Swedish guy. He went to the same high school and played for the same junior team as both Mika Zibanejad and Erik Gustafsson. So those three guys have these relationships going back to when they were teenagers. So I know that they're all really happy to be reunited, and got to talk to Mika about him a little bit as well. And Mika called him a really loyal guy, a guy who he thinks is not just saying, I'm going to do what the team needs, I'm going to put the team first, but actually will do that. And it kind of fits exactly what the Rangers are looking for. We talked about Lindholm going to Vancouver, and that was a guy that I think the Rangers were interested in, obviously went for a higher price tag than Wennberg. But when this perception that we have that the Rangers kind of settled a little bit at this trade deadline, that they went for some maybe B-level targets or C-level targets instead of going for the big splash, I do think that once Lindholm got traded, that Wennberg was one of the guys that the Rangers had very close to the top of their list. I had said on the podcast a few times that the Seattle Kraken were a team to watch and a team that I think the Rangers were monitoring closely to see if they did ultimately decide to sell, because Wennberg and also Yanni Gourde, I think, were two of the more appealing centers that at least might have been out there. I don't know if Gourde was actually available. Obviously, he did not get traded. But Wennberg is a pending UFA. Everybody felt like if the Kraken decided to sell that he was definitely going to be a goner. And I do think that the Rangers had their eye on him for a while for some of those reasons that we just touched on. Both Peter Laviolette and Chris Drury really value those two-way, 200-foot, whatever cliche you want to use kind of centers, especially for the playoffs, especially for that kind of a role in the bottom six. They want a guy who they know is going to bust it defensively, who they can trust defensively. And obviously, it's important that he has some skill and that he's able to contribute some points. And Wennberg has enough of that in the tank. I think he certainly will be more of a point producer than what we've seen the Rangers have in their bottom six otherwise this season, whether you talk about Brodzinski, Gaudreau, Bonino. I obviously think that there's a higher offensive upside there with Wennberg. But you look away the way this guy was used in Seattle. He actually led all Kraken forwards this season in average time on ice per game, plays power play, penalty kill, obviously plays 5-on-5, and had played in their top six not only this season, but also last season when the Kraken won a playoff round and went to the Western Conference semifinals. So this is a guy who has been tasked with matching up against the top forwards on opposing teams at a high level in playoff settings before. And I think the Rangers really, really value that. Also a plus skater, so he helps you with infusing the lineup with a little more team speed, which we've talked about before. So in talking to people around the league, Wennberg, people feel like, is probably the biggest win for the Rangers at this deadline. He's not quite, I think, as offensively gifted as Filip Hedl, but a much more responsible defensive player who brings some of the speed and brings some of the shiftiness and some of those other aspects that Filip Hedl has. So I think people feel like this is a really good replacement for the Rangers. And really, while again, he does not, I think, have the offensive scoring upside of Filip Hedl, I do believe for the role that the Rangers want him to play, he might be better suited, because Laviolette has talked about this. Wennberg, to him, on that line, he wants to build that as a line that he is going to throw out there in tough defensive situations. He put him on a line with Will Cooley and Kaapo Kakko to start off, and to me, that was probably the Rangers' most effective line in that win over St. Louis on Saturday. While they were on the ice together, they outshot the Blues by an 11-2 margin, so they had the ice very much tilted in their favor, and you saw Wennberg find Will Cooley with a few passes. Cooley was very aggressive with getting his shot off in that game, and you also saw Wennberg get an assist. It was a power play, granted, but you saw him get an assist on the goal that Kaapo Kakko scored. We've talked about Cooley as that heavy forechecking presence that I think plays pretty well on a line like that, and we've talked about Kakko being kind of underrated for how good he's been defensively. I know the analytics bear that out, but Kakko has turned himself into a pretty reliable defensive player as well. And so now you have that line. You've got the fourth line with VC, Gaudreau, and Matt Rempe, who really, I think, had his best game so far with the Rangers and looks like he has a chance to stay based on what we saw on Saturday. I mean, you just see the effect that he's having on the other team. We talk about a heavy forecheck. I mean, this guy is just pounding opposing defensemen, and you could tell that they're hesitant to go back behind their net and dig out those pucks because they know the big man is bearing down on them. And what I think Laviolette is hoping is that having those two defensively responsible lines in his bottom six, he can throw them out there against the top six for an opposing team on a big D-zone draw or in a big late-game situation and maybe take a little bit of that burden off of Mika Zibanejad. Because when we talk about Mika's lack of 5-on-5 scoring, which is up to 31 games now in a row for him without a 5-on-5 goal, I think a big part of that is that Mika is so often tasked with defending the best center and the best forwards on the opposing team. And Laviolette has made a point now of telling us this a couple times right after Wennberg was traded, and again more recently, that he's hoping that he can throw more of that responsibility onto the Wennberg line and then give Mika a little more offensive zone starts, a little more positive offensive situations that can maybe get them going and open that up. So I think that's a really important part of this as well. So Wennberg, to me, I think makes a lot of sense for what the Rangers needed. In asking around people around the league about him, you know, people have made it clear this isn't a star-level player. But for what the Rangers are looking for in a third-line role coming from a situation where he was playing top six for Seattle, that this makes the lineup a lot deeper looking and certainly strengthens them down the middle, which we've talked about, I think, was probably their biggest priority at this deadline. So there are definitely things to like about Wennberg, and you even saw it on the PK in that game against St. Louis when he made a really good aggressive play to attack up near the blue line, intercept a pass, and then get an odd man rush going the other way, get really a breakaway going the other way, and draw a penalty that quickly turned a penalty kill into a 4-on-4 and then a power play for the Rangers in what was a very thorough, impressive win against the Blues on Saturday. So Wennberg already made his impact felt, and I do think that there's a lot to like about that deal, and especially when you consider this. The other centers that were dealt, whether it was Lindholm, whether it was Monahan, whether it was Henrique, All of those guys cost first-round picks. The Rangers went and got Wenberg, who I think they preferred over both Monahan and Henrique, especially in Henrique's case, because I think Wenberg is a better skater, and they did it without sacrificing a first-round pick. So I think that there's something to be said for that as well. All right, let's shift now and hear from Jack Roslovic and what he had to say about possibly getting the chance, and this is before we knew for sure he was getting the chance, of filling that void on the top line in that right wing spot next to Mika Zibanejad and Chris Kreider. And actually, the first thing you're going to hear from him before you hear him talk about all that is Larry Brooks from The Post asked him if when he played against the Rangers a couple weeks ago, remember Columbus was in the Garden a couple days after the Rangers had been in Columbus, and Roslovic had a couple points in that game at the Garden, including the game-winning goal. Larry asked him if he had a feeling in that moment about whether or not he might have a chance of playing on the other side pretty soon, and I thought his answer was pretty interesting.
When you had the two games against them, was it in the back of your mind that you might be on the other side?
Yeah. I mean, sure. Like I said, it's always a possibility when you're in the situation that I was, and they were fun games, hard to play against, and like I said, I want to bring my game here.
Can you talk about your versatility and what you prefer to play? Is it center, wing, what do you?
Like I said, play anything. Try to fit in as quick as you can. Obviously the more comfortable guys like me and Alex and Chad get into it and start to feel at home. It's only going to benefit the team.
Do you, as far as, do you spend much time looking at this roster and where you might slot in? Drury talked about you as a right wing. They've had some right wing turnover in the top six a little bit. Is that an opportunity that you see and you get yourself excited about?
Sure, yeah. I mean, I'm a winger, and like I said, though, I have my game. My game's, speed and, playmaking and shooting and, bringing that, bump of energy is important. So wherever they slot me, like I said, I'm here to, continue my good play and do my job.
All right. Well, you had a little Bruce Springsteen playing in the background there in the Rangers locker room. So I hope you guys didn't mind that. I know most of us did not. And you heard a few answers there from Roslovic, including that first one where he admitted that, yes, he did have it in the back of his mind that a team like the Rangers could come calling for him pretty soon, and that it was important for him when playing against them to sort of show out and show them what he's capable of. And I think what we have on our hands here is a guy who seems, at least to me and from the people that I've talked to, pretty highly motivated. And that is what I think the Rangers are banking on with this move. He said at the end there, after that last question that I asked about seeing the void at right wing and whether he feels like he could be a guy to fill that, and that's something that he's taken into consideration. He said that, I've been playing pretty well recently and I want to continue that and bring that energy here. And you look at his last 12 games with Columbus, he posted 13 points, over a point per game in his last 12 with the Blue Jackets. And in talking to people around the league, this is a guy who a lot feel like has been too inconsistent over the course of his career. I mean, you look at his point totals, they don't jump off the page at you. What somebody said to me is it comes in flashes. There will be these streaks where you're like, oh, wow, this guy's got some high-end skill. This guy looks like a top six kind of forward. And then there will be long stretches where it's a little quiet. Now, whether that's motivation, whether that's not having the motor run high enough, we could debate it exactly what the causes for that might be. Could also be a player who's, he's not super young, he's 27, but still kind of finding his way. There's a lot of different things that it could be there. But it seems like when he does have that motor running high, that this can be a pretty effective player. And it seems like he sensed in those last few weeks with Columbus, I'm a pending UFA, I'm well aware of this, and I know that I have a chance to get traded. So now is my time to set myself up to catch the attention of other teams in the league and play my best, be at the top of my game. And he feels like he was. And the numbers kind of bear that out as well. You could also look at the analytics. Columbus, we know, is kind of a dumpster fire. But Roslovic, along with Johnny Gaudreau, or the only two players on that roster at the time of the trade, or only two forwards, I should say, who had an expected goal rate over 50%. So the underlying numbers look pretty good for him as well. And now the hope has to be that he continues to bring that energy, to play with that kind of motivation, to have it all click for him, especially with the added motivation of he's looking ahead to the summer, and this is a guy who wants to set himself up for a new contract. So all of that, I think, adds up to this being a worthwhile risk for the Rangers, because they're hoping to catch lightning in a bottle, very similar to what they caught with Frank Vetrano in 2022. They saw a guy with speed. They saw a guy with skill. They saw a guy who had kind of fallen out of favor in the spot where he was, although Vetrano was getting scratched by the Panthers in some games. Roslovic was still playing on the Blue Jackets' top line, but clearly things had not worked out in Columbus, I think, the way that Roslovic and the Blue Jackets had hoped for when they traded for him from Winnipeg a few years ago. It had never just fully clicked, at least not for a long enough period of time, for him to truly establish himself. And so the Rangers were able to buy low on this guy for a conditional fourth-round pick. It'll elevate to a third-rounder if they get to the Stanley Cup final and Roslovic plays in over 50% of their playoff games. Another one of those deals where you'll be happy if you end up having to give up a third-round pick for him. But now you got a motivated player, a pending free agent, playing for his next contract, who is stepping from a losing situation into a winning situation. And the hope is that that will make everything play up for him, that the skill and the speed, and a lot of people have talked very highly of his ability to carry pucks with speed in transition. I know the analytics look really good in that regard. I know scouts seem to think that that is one of the strengths of his game. So they're hoping that all those things add up to a guy who you might look at and on a very, you know, legitimate Stanley Cup contending team, this is probably not a guy who you're penciling in to your top line, but the Rangers have a lot of other star power in their top six, whether it's Kreider and Zibanejad, who we've talked about at length, need to step up, and they're hoping that this guy can provide a spark for them. But obviously, we've seen those guys produce at a high level. Kreider is now over 30 goals again, even though I think some people seem to think he's having somewhat of a down year. Mika definitely needs to pick up the 5-on-5 scoring, but we know that what he's capable of. And then that other line, which is really their top line, Panarin is having a Hart Trophy-worthy season. Trocheck is having an all-star season. And Alexi Lafreniere is having his very best season. So Roslovic only needs to be the sixth best out of those six guys. But if he can bring some energy, some speed, and some scoring, you know, when talking about the Vetrano comparison, somebody said to me he doesn't have quite as good of a shot as Vetrano, although he's a capable scorer and does have an above-average shot. But he's a little bit of a better playmaker, a better passer than Vetrano. I think all of those things add up to, again, this being a risk worth taking. I don't think that he is as surefire of a good ad as Wenberg. I mean, nobody is surefire, but I think Wenberg really seems to check all the right boxes for the Rangers and really seemed to be, I think, one of the better targets out there for that position. Obviously, Roslovic is not Gensel or Buchnevich or even Vetrano. This is a step or two below that. But for the price point, for getting him for a fourth, maybe a third round pick, I think that that is very much a good risk worth taking for the Rangers. I feel like I've said that a couple times now, but this is a guy who helps with the team speed aspect, brings a little more skill into the top six, allows Kaapo Kakko to slide down to the third line, where I think he's played his best hockey this season, especially from an offensive production standpoint. He's been more productive on the third line. He has become, I think, defensively worthy of playing in that top line role. And it helps Kakko from the standpoint of now he doesn't have to take the best matchups. He doesn't have to be the guy that is always getting matched up against the opposing team's top line. I mean, he is going to do that. We talked about how that is going to be the assignment for that line a lot of the time, but you also know he's going to spend a decent amount of time out there now against the other team's bottom six. And I think that that helps him as well. So it just makes the whole lineup feel more balanced if Roslovic can stick in that top line right wing spot. It's not a given. It would not surprise me if at some point that gets switched again. But obviously, the Rangers' hope is that he will stick in that spot. And that's why his very first game, without even having a practice with the team, you saw them throw him up there with Kreider and Zibanejad. And I thought there was some good and some bad in that game. The speed definitely showed up on some of those shifts for sure. That is a huge plus. I think Roslovic and Wenberg make them a faster team, and that is a big, important takeaway here. But I also thought that at times it was clear that whether it was him or Mika and Chris trying to leave passes for him, that they were a tick off, that they weren't exactly sure where the other ones wanted them to be on the ice. There was a few kind of passes that seemed to go to empty ice instead of going onto the stick of the other guy. That's something that they got to work out in time with games under their belt, with practices under their belt. But I did think that there were flashes. And defensively, they didn't give up much in that game either. Roslovic is not a plus defensive forward from what I understand, so I wouldn't go expecting that. Offense is his forte. Skill, speed. I'm told he has pretty good offensive instincts. And interestingly, what Adam Fox pointed out in the locker room the other day, and this is maybe one of the final points I want to make here, Roslovic was a first-round pick in like 2014 or something like that, I want to say. But obviously that tells you he has some talent. But the thing that Fox pointed out, I knew he played for the U.S. National Development Program, but Fox pointed this out. At the time that he was there, he played on the top line for the program with Austin Matthews and Matthew Tkachuk. You guys might have heard of those two. Two of the best forwards in the NHL right now. So what Fox said was, this is a guy who has a knack for playing with good players. And I think that factored into this decision as well. Roslovic is not going to be the man on that line. He's not going to be the play driver on that line. He's going to be the third best guy on that line. But he is a guy who seems to have a good understanding of how to play with players who are high level, who are high skill, and have some skill of his own and some speed of his own to bring some valuable elements to that line as well. So that's what the Rangers are hoping. And so they may end up regretting not getting Guentzel. They may end up regretting not taking a bigger swing at right wing. I think coming out of this deadline, that's a bigger question mark than what they did at center for sure. But I also think that when you consider the price point, when you consider the potential upside, when you consider the fact that this guy was hot in Columbus in that last month or so, has pretty good underlying numbers, and seems like one of those guys who, if you take him from a losing situation and put him into a winning situation, might pop for you, that having him as your fallback plan definitely helps. I think it makes a lot of sense, and I think that it's a roll of the dice that we could end up talking about in a month or two as looking pretty good for the Rangers. And even if it doesn't work out, it's not like you expended your top assets to do it. So it doesn't absolutely cripple you. Now, it certainly would hurt your chances in the playoffs. It certainly would hurt your lineup depth. But they went out and they took a swing on a guy who I think has more upside than maybe some of the other options they were looking at. Now, last thing I'll note on the right wing subject, Shang Pang, who covers the San Jose Sharks, and you guys have heard on this podcast before, reported that the Rangers actually had a deal in place or were close to a deal for Alex Barabanov, who is a forward for the San Jose Sharks, who is not having a good year at all, but has some offensive skill and had a pretty solid year points-wise last season. And that deal fell through at the last second because the Sharks ended up pulling off that completely out of left field trade with the Vegas Golden Knights for Tomas Hertl and retaining some of his salary, which therefore used their third and final retention spot. The Rangers, to squeeze Barabanov on their roster, would have needed the Sharks to retain a little bit of his salary. And when the Sharks weren't able to do that, they lost out on that. Their own GM didn't say that that was a specific deal, Mike Greer, but he did say that we had a trade that fell through at the last second. And Shang reported that that was with the Rangers. So it sounds like the Rangers were maybe trying to take two swings at potential wingers. I think Roslovic is definitely a bigger priority. I think Roslovic is a better player than Barabanov, especially based on what we've seen this season. Barabanov might have been a healthy scratch for the Rangers, but he would have given them more depth. He would have given them another option if the Roslovic thing didn't work out. So that's kind of an interesting little nugget that came out from Shang in the last few days. But when the Guentzel thing didn't work out, the Rangers, I think, went to that pool of right wingers that were low cost. I think they weren't crazy about a lot of the options there, but Roslovic is of all those options. And I tweeted out a long list of kind of, you know, here's who it's going to be if it's not Guentzel or Vetrano. Roslovic, I think just based on conversations I've had with people, they feel like he was one of the smarter choices to at least take a roll of the dice on in that situation. So we'll see how it works out. Again, I don't want to sit here for sure and say that guy's going to do it. They solved all their problems with that guy, because I need to see a lot more out of that before we make that determination. But I do think that the more I've learned about this guy, the more it's like, okay, this makes some sense. This might work. So that is where we stand on Roslovic. All right. With that, we're going to do it, because I honestly have to get in the shower and get myself ready and head to Madison Square Garden. And we want to get this podcast uploaded as quickly as possible before you guys all start your afternoon commutes. So this is going to now change up the schedule a bit as far as these podcasts are concerned. This is a Monday that we're recording. I'm getting ready to leave on this crazy trip. Carolina Tuesday, then flying to Tampa early Wednesday morning. They play the Lightning on Thursday. Then we fly to Pittsburgh and they play the Penguins on Saturday. And then I fly back to LaGuardia early Sunday morning and have to go straight to Madison Square Garden because the Rangers have an afternoon game against the Islanders. So I am going to be racing all over the East Coast like a madman in the next week. So this podcast is going to be the one that takes us through the week. We'll be back next week with a new episode that will also spare me from having to pack up my podcast equipment, which helps in the packing process. But again, I apologize for making you guys wait a few extra days for this episode. I think it was worth it to have clarity on exactly what the Rangers were going to do, to have some preliminary conversations with the new players, with their teammates, with people around the league, to gather as much information as I could. And hopefully we presented it to you all without being too scatterbrained on this week's episode. So I wish all of you well. You got a lot of hockey to watch. Not only this week, but really the next 2 weeks are just a crazy schedule for the Rangers. So enjoy it. We're going to get a really good look at how this new look lineup does. A really good start on Saturday against the St. Louis Blues, but the tests are going to get tougher now. New Jersey on Monday, Carolina on Tuesday, Tampa on Thursday. Those are all teams. I mean, the Devils are kind of fading a little bit here, but those are all talented teams, teams that are kind of in the Eastern Conference playoff run or race. Carolina's been red hot. They've gained some ground on the Rangers, and now I think they look like one of the front runners in the conference with the deals that they were able to make. So very interesting stuff coming on. I'll be along the whole way on the trip, so we'll have a lot of coverage, a lot of new stories coming your way while I am gone. And then I will be back, of course, as always, next week with a new podcast, and maybe we'll dive a little bit deeper into some of these trade deadline additions and maybe have a guest or two on the show who can help us get to know them a little bit better as well. So until then, everybody stay healthy, everybody stay well, everybody enjoy the hockey, and I will talk to you all next week.